George Angelfield's adoration of his daughter persisted through all the trials a child can inflict on a parent. When she started to talk, he discovered her to be preternaturally gifted, a veritable oracle, and he began to consult her on everything until the household came to be run according to the caprices of a 3-year-old child. Visitors were rare, and as the household descended from eccentricity into chaos, they became rarer. Then the servants began to complain among themselves. The butler left before the child was 2, cook put up for a year longer with the irregular meal times that the child demanded, then the day came when she too handed in her notice. The housemaids felt under no obligation to occupy themselves with chores. Not unreasonably, they believed that their small salaries barely compensated them for the cuts and bruises, sprained ankles and stomach upsets they incurred owing to Charlie's sadistic experiments. They left, and were replaced by a succession of temporary help, none of whom lasted long. Finally, even the temporary help was dispensed with. By the time Isabel was 5, the household had shrunk to George Angelfield, the 2 children, the missus, and the gardener. If George Angelfield noticed their isolation, their domestic squalor, he did not regret it. He had Isabel. He was happy. If anyone missed the servants, it was Charlie. Without them, he was lost for subjects for his experiments. Scouting around for someone to hurt, his eye fell, as it was bound sooner or later to do, on his sister. He couldn't afford to make her cry in the presence of his father, and since she rarely left her father's side, Charlie was faced with a difficulty. How to get her away? By enticement. Whispering promises of magic and surprise, Charlie led Isabel out of the side door, along one end of the knot garden, between the long borders, out through the topiary garden, and along the beech avenue to the woods. There was a place Charlie knew, an old hovel, dank, windowless, a good place for secrets. What Charlie was after was a victim, and his sister, walking behind him, smaller, younger, and weaker, must have seemed ideal. But she was odd and she was clever, and things did not turn out exactly as he expected. Charlie pulled his sister's sleeve up and drew a piece of wire, orange with rust, along the white inside of her forearm. She stared at the red beads of blood that were welling up along the livid line, then turned her gaze upon him. Her green eyes were wide with surprise and something like pleasure. When she put out her hand for the wire, he gave it to her automatically. She pulled up her other sleeve, punctured the skin, and with application drew the wire down almost to her wrist. Her cut was deeper than the one he had given her, and the blood rose up at once and trickled. She gave a sigh of satisfaction as she looked at it, and then licked the blood away. Then she offered the wire back to him and motioned to him to pull up his sleeve. Charlie was bewildered, but he dug the wire into his arm because she wanted it, and he laughed through the pain. Instead of a victim, Charlie had found himself the strangest of conspirators.